Hey, everybody, happy Monday. I am answering your questions that you've emailed me, freedom@charliekirk.com. And I think you're really going to enjoy. We talk about generational abuse. We talk about all sorts of different types of topics and issues that I think are really important and really matter to you. I want to tell you guys to get involved with Turning Point USA. As you know, Turning Point USA is America's best hope. We're making hope happen at tpusa.com. Our high school and college students are fighting on the front lines for America, for liberty, for freedom, where it matters most. It's tpusa.com, and you can get engaged and get involved. You can start a chapter. And so maybe you are a young woman, and you want to come to our Young Women's Leadership Summit and see Candace Owens and Kaylee McEnany and more. Go to tpusa.com/YWLS. That's tpusa.com/YWLS to come to our Young Women's Leadership Summit. Or maybe you want to come to our Student Action Summit in Tampa, Florida, where we now have President Donald Trump confirmed in Tampa, Florida in late July. Come to tpusa.com/SAS. That's tpusa.com/SAS to check that out. And just get engaged, get involved, start a high school or college chapter on the front lines. That's tpusa.com, tpusa.com. You can always support the Charlie Kirk Show at charliekirk.com/support. That's charliekirk.com/support. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. So let's get to this first one. This is Tina. Tina says, quote, Charlie, I read a column of one of my conservative friends shared on Twitter that was written by someone on the right, apparently said overturning Roe versus Wade wasn't conservative. Okay, so this is a column by Brett Stevens, who used to be a really smart person, and he's just become almost unreadable in recent years. And this Brett Stevens now writes for the New York Times. And Brett Stevens wrote this for the New York Times. Overturning Roe is a radical, not conservative choice. Now, he calls himself a conservative. He's just about the same type of conservative as Bill Kristol. That should tell you everything you need to know. Dear Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Barrett, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Thomas, as you'll no doubt agree, Roe versus Wade was an ill-judged decision when it was handed down January 22nd, 1973. It continues by saying, Roe versus Wade diminished the standing on the court by turning it into an even more political branch of government. But a half century is a long time. America is a different place, with most of its population born after Roe was decided. After a decision to overturn Roe, which the court seemed poised to do, according to the leak of a draft of a majority opinion by Justice Samuel Alito, would do more to replicate Roe's damage than to reverse it. He says, it would be a radical, not conservative choice. So Brett Stevens, who I assume is very highly educated, I would like him to tell me, what is the definition of radical? It means to the root, to the core, to the basis. Brett Stevens asks the question in the New York Times. What is conservative? He says, it is, above all, the conviction that abrupt and profound changes to established laws and common expectations are utterly destructive to respect for the law and institutions established to uphold it, and especially when those changes are instigated from above with neither Democrat consent nor broad consensus. Okay, that is not what a conservative is, okay? If there is an immoral or destructive law, a conservative has a moral obligation to try to repeal it and get rid of it quickly. A conservative is the defender not of the orthodoxy of the time. A conservative is a defender of what is beautiful, good, and true. So let me just ask Brett Stevens, was abolishing slavery conservative? Because according to his argument, he says, look, a conservative believes that abrupt and profound changes to established laws are utterly destructive. Well, I'm sorry to say that abolishing slavery, according to Brett Stevens, would have been utterly destructive. yes, big changes in favor of humanity can be very radical. It's exactly right. Bret Stephens calls himself a Biden conservative for the New York Times. He wrote an article in August of 2020. He said, it's about upholding your principles at the expense of your politics. What a joke. He says, to be a Biden conservative isn't easy. It's about upholding your principles at the expense of your politics and embracing mediocrity to ward off malevolence. Above all, it's about curbing your enthusiasm. If that isn't conservative, what is? So this idea, really the argument that Bret Stephens is making, and this is again, he's just kind of going through the motions of whatever the New York Times wants him to do, is that he says, look, if you want to change things and make them better, there's no way you could be a conservative. And since when is that ever true? So we as conservatives believe that some things should not be abruptly changed, like gender norms, like the nuclear family, like homeschooling, like going to church, because those things are beautiful, true, and good. And so then becomes the most important question, what is beautiful, true, and good? I'm glad you asked. How much time you got? Welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show. We talk about it every day. What is good is the essence of the thing. We could talk for hours, years, decades about how the classical Western canon has contemplated over the idea of what is true. What is true is what can be proven. What is true is what points you to a better and happier life. What is beautiful? That which is perfected in being. Now, a classical education, which our country was founded on, a biblical classical education, John Adams actually spoke Hebrew. You couldn't graduate Harvard at the time without actually understanding Hebrew. There was no debate in the founding fathers what was beautiful, good, or true. There was no debate. So let me ask this question, Bret Stephens. What is conservative? It is above all the conviction that abrupt and profound changes to established laws and common expectations are utterly destructive to respect for the law. Was the American founding conservative? Now, hilariously, Edmund Burke, the first conservative, was a British member of parliament, and his counterpart, William Pitt, who actually, they were not in favor, but they were sympathetic to the American revolutionary cause. They understood it. Very against the French Revolution, as Edmund Burke wrote in his book, Reflections on the French Revolution. I think that's the title of the book. It's very good. Bret Stephens continues, the fact that... He continues by saying Roe versus Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey says this, quote, as conservatives, you are philosophically bound to give considerable weight to judicial precedents. No, we're not. No, not if the precedent is bad, particularly when they have been ratified and refined, as Roe was by the 1992 Planned Parenthood v. Casey decision over a long period of time. Now, he knows nothing about the actual decision. The deciding vote was by Anthony Kennedy, who literally wrote in his decision that anyone can define their own meaning. There was a famous phrase in the Anthony Kennedy decision there. It was something like, you are the master of your own morality or something, or abstract morality or something like that. The fact that Planned Parenthood v. Casey somewhat altered the original scheme of Roe, a point that Justice Alito makes much of his draft opinion, doesn't change the fact the court broadly upheld the right to an abortion. We never have held this is what's so ridiculous, is that we nationalized abortion, Bret Stephens. So Bret Stephens, wouldn't the conservative thing, because you know, you living in New York and being a Biden conservative are such an authority on this, wouldn't the conservative thing actually bringing back to the states, which this reversing of Roe versus Wade would actually do? Wouldn't that be the conservative thing? Bret Stephens writes, again, the conviction that abrupt and profound changes to established laws and common expectations are utterly destructive to the respective law. Would be challenging the Holocaust be conservative? No, we're not supposed to challenge laws. Can't do that. Anthony Kennedy wrote, quote, at the heart of liberty is the right to define one's own concept of existence, of meaning of the universe, and the mystery of human life. Anthony Kennedy, the famous quote that gave us the decision of Planned Parenthood v. Casey. Bret Stephens writes in the New York Times, the pro-lifers will soon rediscover the meaning of another conservative truism. Beware of unattended consequences. Those return to the old, often unsafe illegal abortions and abortions in Mexico, the entrenchment of pro-life majorities in blue states, and the likely consolidation of pro-choice majorities in purple states driven by voters newly anxious over their reproductive rights. Oh, wait, so blue states will become bluer and red states will become redder? And children's lives will be saved? Interesting. That sounds pretty good. Americans are almost evenly divided on their personal views of abortion, but only 19% think abortion should be illegal under all circumstances. It shouldn't be hard to imagine how Americans will react to the court conspicuously providing aid and comfort to the 19%. That's not what they're doing, Brett Stevens. That's not what they're doing. They're sending it back down to the states. How did this pass a New York Times editorial board? This doesn't make abortion illegal. I wish it would. It doesn't. It brings it back down to the states. The word conservative, again, this is such a drive-by shooting of conservatism. The word conservative encompasses many ideas and habits, none of more important than prudence, which comes from the Greek word prudentia. Justices, be prudent. Yes, the prudent thing would be to save the lives of the unborn. The prudent thing would be able to protect those that can't protect themselves. That would be the conservative thing to do. Look, inflation is out of control. One area we see it more than ever is the grocery store. Even though grocery prices feel like they've doubled, Good Ranch's prices have stayed low and affordable. Once you subscribe, it's locked in. The price never goes up. Your best price is locked in for life. They sell 100% American meat and deliver it to your door for a great price. Good Ranch's helps solve your meat problem. And the problem is 85% of the grass-fed beef in stores and online is imported. Shop Good Ranch's for all your beef, chicken, and seafood needs. Their pre-trimmed and pre-marinated chicken breasts are absolutely delicious. I love Good Ranch's and you guys should too. Their animals are ethically raised and they're beautifully sourced. They do the things the right way and it shows in every box. Good Ranch's takes the guesswork out of the meat aisle and grocery shopping. Get a steakhouse quality at home with Good Ranch's. Right now, go to goodranchers.com/Charlie and do it right now. It's Good Ranch's, American meat delivered. I love Good Ranch's. When Good Ranch's gets delivered to our home or to our office, it's something incredible. If you don't buy the meat in your house, tell the person who does to check out Good Ranch's. Support the Charlie Kirk Show. Support America. GoodRanchers.com/Charlie. Norma from Queens says, Charlie, I heard you say we're going to face confrontation and chaos like we haven't seen since Floydapalooza once Roe is overturned. What are some of your ways to respond to an argument to the left? The left likes to use to justify killing children. Thanks, Norma from Queens. Look, the reaction has been extreme. Let's go to Cut 65, Chuck Schumer, about the outrage about the upcoming repealing of Roe versus Wade, which, again, just sends it back down to the states. There will be plenty of babies still murdered in New York City. Don't worry, Chuck. I know that's a big concern for him. Play Cut 65.
I cannot tell you the outrage I feel at this decision and the outrage I feel that Republicans who did it won't own up to it. And duck it. It's despicable. We're not talking about anything inconsequential. We're talking about women's health, a women's right to choose, and the millions and millions and millions of American women who have felt the need to have an abortion. Just about every one of us knows someone in that situation.
Yeah, actually, I don't, Chuck Schumer. But again, the one thing that really wakes him up and really fires him up is this issue. Okay, so I'm going to kind of pepper in some clips throughout all of this and kind of talk about this. The first of which is this, which is there's some talking points about Roe v. Wade. And again, I'm not really on social media. I'm told that there is just an enormous amount of chatter happening on social media about these issues. And we've had the great Lila Rose on here, Seth Gruber, Kristen Hawkins, who has one of the best pro-life videos I've seen in a long time. Turning Point USA posted it. I saw it on YouTube. And I have a very, I'm a tough grader. And that is one of the best videos I've seen. She did an unbelievable job against this incredibly just mean activist. And so one of the arguments is this, is that outlawing abortion doesn't end abortion. It ends safe abortion. So in Texas, we saw that just the heartbeat bill in Texas, allow it to happen, actually has decreased the number of abortions. Really positive. There are more babies than ever before. And the question is, do you believe that abortion is a medical procedure or do you think it's something different? I believe life begins at conception. Not just that I believe, it's what's true. Life does begin at conception. And when life begins is the most important question. When does the human life become worthy of protection? And so we have laws to protect the innocent of a 3-year-old or a two-year-old, one that cannot protect themselves. So why is that, though? What is the reason for it? And so this was something the Berkeley people never thought of. And I asked them a question. I said, do you believe in the moral principle, in the moral principle of creating law that says that the strong have a moral obligation not to crush the weak, or that the strong need to prevent the weak from being crushed? And if you say no, then you're a eugenicist, which actually is where the abortion movement came from, or you're a Darwinist. So you believe that the survival of the fittest. I believe that there is a moral obligation that all human beings created in the image of God, image bearers, should have the protection of the strong, of the older, and the bigger. That's baked into all of our laws, by the way. Our laws are already codified with a moral code. One of my favorites is they say, Charlie, you can't legislate morality. That's all you do is you're legislating morality. All laws point to some morality. Of course, to some good or what you think is good. Aristotle wrote that in the Ethics, that all human behavior points towards some good, whether it be anti-murder laws, anti-theft laws, or arson. Or a good example is, I mean, just to kind of take a sidestep that's seemingly unrelated, why is it that you must slow down in a school zone? Why are you not able to go 75 miles an hour when passing an elementary school? It's because there's a moral claim that the children that will be crossing on the sidewalk matter. Why do buses have to stop before they cross a railroad or a rail track? Yeah, I guess railroad. Why is that? They open up their door just in case the bus is not able to move. There needs to be built into the law that children have a way to escape that bus, just in case. All laws point to some morality. There's no such thing as an agnostic law. There isn't. Now, whether you think that should be done on a federal level or a state level, totally appreciate that. That's where the Constitution allows a lot of different safeguards and a lot of different of that. But this idea that laws can be kind of be morally agnostic is just not true. And if that would be true, then we wouldn't have the very basic laws that have built our civilization. Don't take people's stuff. Don't murder them. Even seatbelt laws are focused on the preservation of the human. Hello, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. Super important announcement. Look, when you swipe your credit card, you're funding liberal causes. Dozens and dozens of times a month. Every time you swipe that card, you might as well do BLM, LGBT, BLM, LGBT, Clinton Foundation. But now there's a choice. I got to know these guys. I vetted them, checked out the technology. I'm a partner with them. I'm all in. It's called Coin, C-O-I-G-N. It's a new credit card built for conservatives. I'm moving all my credit card activity under Coin. And the Coin credit card is an unlimited cashback Visa credit card that is just like every other credit card you've ever owned, with one huge exception. Every time you use the Coin card, they contribute to conservative charities that support your values. I'm using it and you should too. Remember, we have to create a parallel economy, and this is a great new option. Act now. Go to coign.com right now to sign up to get a conservative Coin credit card. That's coign.com. Join Coin and let's start spending right. Ramona from North Carolina. Charlie, are we ever going to get justice for what they did during the lockdowns? She has some pretty, aggressive four-letter words in there, some swear words, so I'm not going to continue that. So I'm just going to summarize her question like that. There's a new story out that pairs nicely with Ramona's question. Remote learning, according to FreeBeacon.com, had an even worse effect on U.S. students' education than was previously known. K-12 students who attended school from home in the 2021 school year lost 50% of their typical math curriculum learning, according to a Harvard study. Quote, Emily Oster from Brown University said, it's pretty clear that remote school was not good for learning. Oh, who would have possibly been able to predict this? Anthony Fauci and all these people. Deborah Birx, the scarf woman, did so much damage to our country. Children are at a low risk of severe illness from death from COVID-19. In-school transmissions is also extremely rare. Quote, in places where schools reopened that summer and fall, the spread of COVID was not noticeably worse than in places where schools remained closed. Schools also reopen in parts of Europe without seeming to spark outbreaks. This is intergenerational abuse. While grandparents were able to still go golf outside and see their property values increase, their grandkids had masks on being abused in schools. Now, I'm not blaming the grandparents. I'm not. But there were plenty of people that were septuagenarians and octogenarians that were perfectly fine with locking down the country while their kids and their grandkids, and grandkids in particular, have been totally and completely and permanently damaged by the lockdown agenda. This is from 2020, just a little flashback, and our leaders did very little to fix this. Young girl explaining how she couldn't live like this anymore. Masks, not seeing friends and family, not going to school. And it, of course, created the most suicidal, depressed, alcohol-addicted generation in history. Play cut 82.
We need to do something about it because I can't keep living this life. It's too much for me.
What life are you living?
Masks on, going in the store. Not be able to touch anyone or anything. I can't be in school, and I can't see friends, and I especially can't see family, so it's hard.
Yeah. Do you miss school?
Yes, I miss school very much.
It's back from 2020. Here's a report on how parents are happy kids are back in school because online learning was challenging. Play cut 83.
Monica Weitch is happy her son Elrod is back in school with his fourth grade classmates because learning online at home had its challenges.
You like getting to see your friends and have recess and gym?
Yeah.
Columbia University professor Aaron Pallas focuses on educational resources and how they're distributed in New York City. He says there's no question the pandemic shutting down schools, then hybrid learning, has been disruptive for students' social, emotional, and academic development.
Third graders in 2017, 2018 probably were in much better shape academically than third graders in 2021 and 2022.
One more cut here, cut 84. ABC contributed on how online learning has been a disaster. And we're at a place where online learning doesn't have to be happening anymore. Play cut 84.
Yeah, so first of all, remote learning has been a disaster for America's kids. And I think we have to acknowledge that. And we have to do everything we can to minimize any further remote learning. Even without those other upgrades, which I would like to see, it still is safe to, for kids and teachers to be back in school. So I think at this point, there's really no good explanation for having remote schools.
And yet Randy Weingarten, who is largely responsible for this, is now saying, look, kids are in crisis. You created the crisis. You created the lockdowns. You pushed for the lockdowns. You refused to have these schools be reopened. Now, remember, not only do they not let a crisis go to waste, as Tiny Dancer Rahm Emanuel would say, they are the crisis makers. They create the crisis themselves. Play cut 44.
Our kids are in crisis. And we had a mental health crisis before COVID, but with, and Dr. Eng will talk about this far better than I do, but within, but for 2 years of disruption, 2 years of looking at the screens, 2 years of not having a normal kind of routine and rhythm, recovery is really tough.
And yet she created it herself. She's the architect behind all of these policies that shut down the schools. She's the head of the American Federation of Teachers that has 8 to 10 million members, teacher union members. She was pushing for school closures. And she said it was because of COVID. It was not because of COVID. It was because of our reaction to COVID. The damage that this will have done to this generation, it will, I'm not sure if we'll ever find out for the next 5 to 10 years. We will have a generation just totally controlled by the pharmaceutical companies for antidepressants, for anxiety disorders, social anxiety disorders, and for what? What was the positive? Nothing. Pairs nicely to this question. Brian from Michigan. Charlie, explain more about where you think the economy is right now. Well, that pairs actually our reaction to COVID, which we're still living through, to what we're living through with inflation right now. Play cut 66, Rick Santelli, prices are not going back to where they were. Play cut 66.
But prices are not, and I underscore, are not going back to where they were. You'd need months and months and months of minus signs on year over year, on month over month, CPI and PPI. Don't think you're going to get months and months of those.
Cut 68, CNBC panelist, I'm concerned about the decline in the labor force participation rate. People ask me, do you think a recession is coming? I think we're in a recession right now. Play cut 68.
I am concerned about the decline in the participation rate. I mean, we shouldn't read too much into 1 month's report, but this is part of the reason we've been seeing pressures on wages. And so if workers are dropping out again, I think the pressure on wages could continue. So I think there are some signs there of concern. It's maybe the quiet before the storm.
Economic advisor for Joe Biden was asked about this, about, do you think we're heading towards a recession? Well, we can't rule anything out. What a ridiculous question. We're heading into a recession. We are in a recession right now. Play cut 61.
Americans, they don't feel good about it, right? You're looking at least they're feeling, and they don't feel good about it. Can you tell the American people that we're not headed for a recession?
I can tell the American people that we are much better positioned when it comes to that recession question than pretty much any other advanced economy I've seen. But probably more importantly, you can never rule anything out. So that's not really a relevant question.
You can never rule anything out. Oh, okay, got it. And who are they blaming? Well, thankfully, the American people are blaming Joe Biden. The economy, inflation, created by our response to COVID. We did this. It did not happen to us. It wasn't an asteroid that came out of nowhere. It was a self-inflicted economic set of conditions. The economic misery that you're living through, the declining of your purchasing power, the inflation of your rent, the inflation of your grocery bill, and weakening of your wage power was done by your leaders to ourselves. It was a self-inflicted set of economic catastrophes. Play cut 71.
But Americans, a majority of Americans actually think President Biden's policies have hurt the economy. They don't feel like he is doing enough on inflation. And of course, all of this is going to be top of mind for voters as we head closer and closer to those November midterm elections.
And 67 on CNN completes the point. 67.
You cover the president. He's aware of these numbers. This is a trajectory you do not want. Disapproval of the president's handling of the economy. Look at that. You go back to April 2021 on the left, 66% now in a brand new CNN poll. I mean, that line is heading in the wrong direction. And heading in the wrong direction when we are now inside 6 months to Election Day, it gets hard to improve the numbers in time.
So what do you do when you're in a recession? Just be careful what you spend money on. But they're going to try... They're already raising rates because there's a question here. Isaac says, what does it mean when they raise rates? Rates are the price of money, so they're going to make it more expensive now to be able to get to borrow money. So when it's more expensive to borrow money, people will borrow less, and that will be a tightening of the belt, but I think it's way too little, way too late. We decided to indulge in these artificially low interest rates, and we got the sugar high of high stocks, high real estate, incredible wealth and income inequality. And what goes up must come down. And boy, are we going to start to see it come down. Now, I think America's resilient. I do agree with this numbskull, Jared Bernstein. I think America is better positioned, not because of you, but because of the 4 years of harvest we got under Donald Trump of the incredible pro-growth policies that got us close to it. But we're heading towards a very dangerous set of economic conditions. And I'm not celebrating it. That's the thing. Is the left celebrates when Donald Trump was getting close to a recession. They celebrated when COVID came. They said it was God's gift to the left. I think it's a disaster when Americans suffer. And anyone who disagrees with that, I want the well-being of my country more than the well-being of my political party. Because my political party hopefully will help the country. Okay. Got another question here from... Carl in Tennessee. Charlie, can you explain more about the Supreme Court leak and the unprecedented nature of it? I can't think of a better person to help unpack that than Ted Cruz. Play cut 74.
This leak is the most egregious violation of trust at the Supreme Court in the history of our nation. It has never happened, even once, that a draft opinion leaks from the court before it issues in over 200 years of our nation's history. I fear for the court's ability to continue to function as it was designed to function if justices cannot circulate opinions and have deliberation and have discussions. The way the Supreme Court works, an initial opinion circulates, but there are hundreds and sometimes thousands of changes as the justices negotiate back and forth, sometimes sentence by sentence, paragraph by paragraph, footnote by footnote.
But don't expect the other Democrat senators to care. They're too busy, like Chuck Schumer, screaming at the top of his lungs about how this is the highest of all stakes in an attack on women health or whatever. Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. You've known it in your gut, and something just wasn't right about the 2020 election. Well, guess what? You were right. And here's the proof you've been waiting for. In Dinesh D'Souza's explosive new documentary, 2000 Mules, executive produced by Salem Media Group, you'll see jaw-dropping evidence of exactly how the Democrats pulled off the biggest heist in American history. Drawn on meticulous research from the election integrity group True the Vote, 2000 Mules uses both cell phone geo-tracking data and video evidence to uncover a massive network of illegal ballot trafficking in all five key swing states. Enough election fraud to change the outcome of the 2020 election. Thousands across the country attended the national theatrical release. Now you can watch from the comfort of your home, watch on any device with a web browser. Gather friends, families, and skeptics alike, but don't miss it. Go to salemnow.com to watch it today. See the movie that Donald Trump calls a real blockbuster? Go to salemnow.com to watch today. That's salemnow.com. So crime is increasing all across the country. And what is the Attorney General of the United States doing? Well, Oscar from Iowa asked us about Merrick Garland. And I actually have a way to tie into this. Play cut 70. This is what Merrick Garland is concerned about. Play cut 70.
I'm pleased to announce that we are launching the Justice Department's first ever Office of Environmental Justice to oversee and help guide the Justice Department's wide-ranging environmental justice efforts.
You cannot make
like
this
all
up.
Parts of government, it will get its own acronym, OEJ.
Oh, now that it has an acronym, you know, I couldn't have figured out that myself, Merrick Garland. I thought it would have been, I don't know, DNA or something. Come on. I have to repeat the acronym. Thank you. Appreciate that. Like all parts of government. I think they're proud of all the acronyms, the alphabet soup. When Republicans regain Congress in November, which it looks like they will, they need to impeach Merrick Garland. Impeach the cabinet. Merrick Garland needs to be impeached and removed from office for targeting parents for his very corrupt dealings with his son-in-law, potentially being involved in critical race theory curriculum. Been a while since we've talked about that story. We're going to have to dust that off soon. But how Merrick Garland is the worst attorney general in American history. That says something. America's had some terrible attorney generals before. Hi, Charlie. I see liberals outraged over news that Donald Trump apparently wanted to blow up the drug houses of Mexican cartels when he was in office, but his Secretary of Defense shut down the idea. Why would anyone be opposed to that? And why would our military leaders, who are responsible for keeping us safe, kill an idea that would objectively keep America safer and healthier? None of it makes sense. Orenthal from Del Rio. Okay, so, look, in principle, I agree going after the Mexican drug cartels. The Mexican government wouldn't be totally supportive of that, unfortunately, because a lot of them are captured by the Mexican drug cartels. But it does beg the question, why are we more interested in fighting about the borders 5,000 miles away from us in Ukraine when Mexican drug cartels are a far greater threat to the American way of life for drugs, for guns, for human trafficking? Why exactly is that? Well, the Mexican drug cartels control a lot of American politicians. They control flows of capital into America, and a lot of people benefit from remittances. Over $40 billion is remitted back from America to Mexico. Look, if an American president wants to declare a war that I would be in favor of, let's declare war against the cartel. We'd wipe them out. The Mexican government doesn't want that. Cartels have killed more Americans, either directly or indirectly, over the past 10 years than ISIS, than Russia, than any other place. Of course we should treat them like terrorists. Seize their weapons, seize their money, and a drone or two I don't think would hurt if it was within the parameters of informed engagement and if it was done properly and correctly. But I guarantee you that if the American Marines, the beautiful Marines, were given a green light, 100,000 Marines, they could wipe out those coward cartels and the Northern Hemisphere would be a safer and better place. But the Mexican government is complicit with the Mexican drug cartels. It's been that way for quite a while. Okay, I want to close with this. So it depends on when you're listening to this. I'm heading on a 10-day rest. So if you guys have book recommendations, please send them to me, freedom@charliekirk.com. Rest and recharge. Been traveling the country like crazy and kind of the most ambitious trips we've done in quite a while. And so I will be back May 16th. We have our amazing podcast lined up for you that we have pre-recorded and that we have pre-taped, including on abortion and life, some of our campus speeches as well. So make sure you are subscribed to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast. May 16th, I think you're going to have a whole new aesthetic here. And we have some phenomenal guests that will be coming out here. And by the way, make sure you are subscribed because some of our best content happens after. I get a couple days just to kind of think and journal and read and analyze things. We'll be off to the races. And remember, it's a marathon, not a sprint, everybody, that Jesus needed to go and rest. None of us are above that. So again, email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. And I just want to reiterate our gratitude. You guys are just a phenomenal audience. You're wonderful people. I love hearing from you, freedom@charliekirk.com. Your feedback, you guys listen. I was in Ohio. I must have 100 people come up, try to listen every episode. It's amazing. We're so honored and so touched by that. And so God bless you guys. Again, subscribe to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast. Take out your podcast app. Go see 2,000 Mules. It'd be great family viewing, 2,000 Mules. God bless you guys. See you soon. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.